This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So far, fast to freedom, stars tonight.
Open the voice gate for September 9th, 2022. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling podcast feed or our own dedicated podcast feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. Click the box that says sponsor this podcast and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Iron Mike Spears, joined alongside, as always, my co-host, Frank Case Lowe. Case, this actually might be like a year before you're born, but you know what the symbolism of September 9th is for my generation?
Is that like when a South Park episode aired?
Pretty close. 9/9/1999 was when the Sega Dreamcast was released. Sup, Rich?
Okay, so yeah, Rich Craich, nice to meet a fan. I am 7 months old when the Dreamcast comes out.
Yeah, as you are not the video game person amongst the two of us, they try to treat it like a big thing, and then the Dreamcast happened. But 9/9/99, they picked like the best day ever to do it.
But is the Dreamcast good or bad?
Is Sega really all good or all bad? Like, that's the thing. Like, Sega was already in a downward spiral when the Dreamcast came out because of the Saturn failures. So I liked it. There was a lot of stuff on there. I mean, WWF Royal Rumble still has better graphics than WWE 2K21.
Yeah, I feel like by the time I started playing video games, Sega was almost on its way out. I mean, one of the first games I played was NBA 2K2, which at that time was still a Sega release. And then I had I think the game was called like Wave Runners, and it was just like a video game of jet skis, which is awesome in hindsight. I wouldn't mind finding that and playing
about
it again.
Wave Race 64?
Yes. Yeah, I believe that's what it was called. Yeah. Yeah, that game was great. But by the time I was of the market age where I could buy games, I mean, we're talking 2007, 2008, 2009, and Sega's gone by that point.
Yeah, it's something that I found myself, like, there's a journalist who was around like during the 90s and like this, and he's found another journalist and he's going through like video game history as being a journalist at those times, and the big takeaway I've gotten about like Sega was Sega only really figured it out in the United States for like a 3-year period, and that was when Sonic was released. After that, not good at all.
I'll take that, though, because the video game market right now is very boring. And I say that as somebody who likes boring video games. I really only play sports games, and I play those games offline. So I am the worst consumer possible. Games are not really made for me anymore. But there's, like, I have a PS5, and there's a certain sterileness to the PS5 that I don't love. I mean, I've racked up a ton of hours in MLB The Show this year. I play, you know, the new NBA 2K releases when they come out. I'm not buying Madden this year. I liked last year's Madden. Not buying Madden this year. And outside of that, there's not a ton that really grabs me.
I think it's something that, like, you're not alone in that. Because I know a lot of people who are just like, well, I'll go play the updated sports games. Or when the new Call of Duty comes out, I'll pick it up. Or, hey, they put out a new Halo. Like, it's something where I feel like that the video gaming is more fragmented now, more so than ever. And I mean, like, you even have like people like, if you go on a trip and you go on a plane, Case, it's really just kind of fascinating to see, like, flying back from All Out, every single kid either had a tablet or a Switch on the planes. Every single one.
Yeah. But by the way, we have not really spoken this week, and I'm
weirdly so.
I was telling Mike, I slid into this chair as he sent me the link. I just got home. I haven't really put a ton of thought in this episode. We will see how this goes. But how was your all? I know, and we're both on a time crunch also. We're going to try to make this a really fast episode. I am going to add another detour before we talk about Drangate. How was your all-out weekend?
You know, oh gosh. So sadly, we didn't get to hang out, which big bummer.
No, I didn't see you, and I didn't see Rich Kreach, who are the two people. I didn't see Sue Williams. Those are the people that I like bumping into. Not that I dislike running into anybody, but you were kind of the three on my list that I had circled that I was hoping I would get to see, and that did not happen. I was kind of reclusive this entire weekend.
But I think that fit the vibes of the week. Like, profoundly weird vibe all out weekend. Like, just like I was out in Hoffman Estates because plans change, especially over the summer. So like it made sense for me at one point to be in Hoffman Estates. Did not make sense for me last weekend. I went to go see the worst show of my life though during the weekend.
Was that our friends at Game Changer or our friends at Black Label Pro?
That is our friends at Game Changer, who are legally obligated to put on 10 shows for IWTV as terms of their settlement. And it was the worst live show I've ever seen in my life.
That was the thing that, like, I obviously pick on these indies a lot. I mean what I say. I don't think they run a very good operation. And I just saw that somebody booked Shun against Space Monkey. And with all due respect to the Space Monkey, who's a
Black
fine
Label.
Little... Yeah, I was just irate at that. And I don't have an issue with the Space Monkey. It's just that I don't want to see him wrestle Shun Skywalker when he has limited U.S. dates. But, I spent the weekend with friends who are into Game Changer and into Black Label Pro. And I didn't feel like they were even all that positive about it. Somebody told me at one point, and I forget the wrestler's name. She was somebody that I was just introduced to this weekend, but they went, "Oh, so-and-so had a banger at Effie's Big Gay Brunch." And I had to stop them and go, no, they didn't. There was not a banger at Effie's Big Gay Brunch. I'm sorry. I support Effie. I'm sure he's a wonderful guy. There were no bangers on that show, but even on the Game Changer proper shows and Black Label Pro, I didn't feel like there was a ton of buzz about them.
Yeah, so my mindset was originally, I knew that there were Dragon Gate guys who their dates began before All Out Weekend. Like, we both knew that. Like,
yeah, September 1st.
September 1st was a date for a lot of people in the promotion to be free and clear for the United States. So I booked my flights thinking, hey, you know, AAW, they're responsible. Well, they later now have booked Yamato, so yes, they are. But I was like, okay. GCW, there's really not anyone else flying in here. You're going to want to have some draw here. No, everyone booked the Despicable Aussie Open and Despicable Dunkzilla throughout the weekend. It was awful. And then, not to get too much down this rabbit hole, I do have a show report up on this at Spears of Asians. It was awful case. It was something that, so you're legally forced to make these shows for IWTV. You have to put these shows on. You're probably not... The tickets is probably the only money you're making off of this thing. If you're forced to do 10 shows, Case, I would argue, wow, I don't really want to give away anything for these things, but this would be a great time to try some folks out, right? Like, I feel like that's what the logical result would be.
Yeah, I follow.
That's not what happened at all. They instead, they did a show and tell show, of which doing stuff that it's good that no one from national TV was there, because it was stuff such as a used condom versus cum rag match.
Oh my god.
Billy Starks managing to really bust herself open within the first minute of a match.
I gotta talk about the Billy Starks thing for a second.
Okay.
So my friends that I spent the weekend with were front row at that show. And the report that I got back was her head hit the post. And I'm not making fun of Billy Starks. I am gonna make fun of her hillbilly father. I'm not making fun of Billy Starks. The report that I got back was her head hit the post, she goes to the floor and starts whimpering in pain. And my friends back up like, well, surely we're going to bring the stretcher out here, a doctor's going to come, whatever. And no, I guess the dad just like does a very brief check and then, all right, she can continue. And a bunch of people had to watch a 17-year-old girl bleed all over an indoor soccer field for the next 10 minutes or so.
Yeah, it was... One, scary. Like, it was an amount of blood case that even as someone who's watched wrestling for 23 years, I was like, that's a lot of blood. And then two, it's just like, really? You're not going to say, okay, she has to go get this. Like, she had to go get staples for it. but they kept on doing it. It just was. And then there was a sickening trios match that was one of the worst matches I've ever seen. And then right as Everett Connors came out, it's like, well, I've been here for 2 hours. I got my $20 worth. I think I'm out of here. And I paused for a second and I thought, let's see who he's going to face. Jimmy Lloyd came out vaping and I was gone.
Oh, just my God.
Out the door.
Billy Starks is selling merch of her bloody face on it. And as somebody who frequently gets the question, oh, what does your shirt mean? Whether it's, you know, a rare wrestling t-shirt that I wear or a band t-shirt that I wear. I cannot imagine being an adult man wearing a Billy Starks bloody face t-shirt and getting the, oh, what does your shirt mean question. How could you explain that to a person in any way that doesn't make you sound like a violent, deviant criminal?
You're immediately put on a watch list.
Oh my God, I just can't imagine.
It's like the same thing with like a lot of like the really kind of seedy looking like women's wrestling t-shirts, watch list.
Oh yeah, no, it's bad. Before we talk about Dragon Gate, which obviously has been the focus of the wrestling world this week, I do want to talk about an underground story that I don't think a ton of people have given their thoughts on. The AEW All Out press scrum after the show. we haven't talked about it, and I just want to know big picture what your thoughts are on it.
Well, I'm glad that we were recording now right after I wrote all about it. Yeah, so the way I kind of look at all of that is Tony Khan never really had control of his locker room, and now we're seeing case of it. The EVPs have basically just been a title since he took over control of the book, so why are they still EVPs? And Ace Steel, I'm sorry, you threw a chair. You're gone. And Punk, I think that we won't see Punk in AEW, but I think he'll get a nice little check with a bunch of zeros on it and a non-disparagement agreement.
The Punk interview itself is one of the single funniest things that I've ever seen.
The bag of spindrifts.
This has been a tough week for me. You know, I'm a CM Punk guy and a Young Bucks guy, and I'm quite fond of Kenny Omega as well. I was in the car on the way back from All Out when Punk took the stand, and I was reading about all of these things that he was saying. And so to come home, to flip on YouTube, and to then see it in action. Mike, you and I'm assuming, have both watched a fair amount of avant-garde theater in our day. We're two theater kids, ultimately.
I've not only seen it, I have participated in an avant-garde film. Yes.
I've never seen a more thoroughly entertaining, compelling, and genuine performance in my entire life. That post-show press conference is the greatest single piece of live theater that I've ever seen. I was on the edge of my seat from start to finish. And I've said many mean things about Denise Salcedo, both on this podcast and on my Twitter account. I have to give
credit. You've taken the kid gloves off.
Well, yes, because I think she's largely horrible. But nevertheless, I have to give Denise credit. She is the one that I saw that filmed the beginning of the press conference when CM Punk asked the question, do you still do improv? And to think about how that's how it started is the funniest. It's the greatest single piece of content I may have ever seen. Punk angrily eating a cupcake, chugging these non-alcoholic drinks, and just going scorched earth. The only thing that would have made it better was if David Bixenspan was present in that room, because I think Bix would have combusted into a million little pieces.
Yeah, tremendous.
And I also think if Bix was in the room, Punk might have hit him with a chair instead of Ace Steel hitting somebody with a chair.
Yeah, it's just wild, and it was always going to end this way with Punk. Like, that is the thing. Like, he was always, I mean, he's a miserable person, you know, and I think, and this is the thing that kind of took me a week to kind of get to, he was out of wrestling for 7 years, and I would argue those 7 years of pro wrestling are more like 20 culturally. And I think that became the big crux there.
The bummer for me is that, you know, Joe Lanza is the one who always says, and he's right, he says adapt or die, and that Paul Heyman has been able to adapt for a long time. Gabe Sapolsky was able to adapt. You either adapt or die. And I am someone who loves those stories of Punk going into OVW in 2005, not wanting to be there, but then befriending Paul Heyman, learning all of these things about the business, and making it a situation that would have worked for him, while at the same time not exactly taking the advice of a Tony Atlas or a Johnny Ace or whoever, whatever old guy was trying to tell him what to do. CM Punk believed in what he was doing. I'm so disappointed that he is now the Tony Atlas in this situation and that he doesn't see that these young guys, whether they're right or not, are just in the position that he was in 15 years ago. It sucks to see that. I hate just seeing people in general succumb to that, just to the fact that everybody gets old at some point, and Punk got old, and it's a bummer, but I'm going to cherish that press conference for the rest of my life. That was the greatest thing I've ever seen.
I think the thing that really set the entire press conference for me was Chris Jericho standing up, pulling Tony Khan, and very audibly picked up by every microphone saying, "Hey, some shit happened. Some shit went down," and walked away. Sheriff Chris Jericho. Have you soaked in my Sheriff Chris Jericho idea, Case?
I've seen some of these takes. You know, if Tony Khan's not going to hire Loki, I think Chris Jericho is the next best option.
And it's insane that I'm saying that.
You know? Think about that 2 years ago when Jericho was like really overweight and a disaster and a bore on these shows. And now, this is, you know, I'm not the first person to say this, but now we're turning to Chris Jericho for stability, and that seems like a horrible position to be in.
But it seems horrible, but everyone in that locker room looks up to him. People love working with him. And he is someone that's, in Punk's mind, has been there and done that, and did it to a bigger scale than CM Punk ever would. So, I go Sheriff, I do away with all the VP titles, like, You can't be in a physical confrontation if you're an executive. Like, that's not like me being fun, please. That's just, you can't do that. And you fire them all. Oh, or you fire them all from the positions, not from wrestling. And then you appoint Chris Jericho as sheriff of the locker room. And you make Rouge his deputy, because both of them operate in two very similar ways. But the thing is that we all know Chris Jericho, as soon as he starts talking to Rouge, will think he's the most interesting person ever. And Rouge will not care at all.
You know,
and
what
Chris Jericho will spend however long it is to try to get Roosh's approval, and this will work.
That's a great point. We're gonna get a Roosh Chris Jericho program that, like, you and I are gonna go like, eh, it's like a 2¾ star brawl, like, that was whatever. And then there's gonna be people that are like, 4.5 stars, match of the year, fuck you Okada, you think you can work? Roosh and Chris Jericho know what's up.
Don't call me out like this.
We are destined for vastly differing opinions within the little bubble of Roosh and Chris Jericho matches.
It's gonna happen, and it's gonna be great. I can't wait.
Let's talk about Dragon Gate, Mike.
All right, so as we said, we're going to be on a bit of a time crunch here. We're going to take big topics this week, because it's in a way that both the Osaka show from the 4th will be up on the network until the 11th, and the Corkin from yesterday started on the 8th, will be up there at the 15th. It just seems like something that's easier to talk about the topics here and on the show today than it is to really go through match by match. And the overwhelming topic, I mean, the biggest story coming out of this week, as Dragon Gate has finished all of their network shows before Dangerous Gate on the 19th, is High End. We knew this was coming, but we didn't know what was coming, as at Corkin Hall, in a 6-man tag match with High End, Yamato, Benkei, and Kagetora, went up against Gold Class, Naruki Doi, Kota Minenora, and Minorita. Partway through the match, Minorita gets Benkei to chase him. They go away for a long time. Minorita eventually comes back, and everyone's going, where's Benkei? But then Benkei appears, draped in gold with the golden rose. He spears Yamato, throws Rita on top of him, and joins Gold Class. So now Gold Class is now back up to 4 members, and High End is now down to 3.
I thought this was a phenomenal angle. You know, I talked last week about how I really thought heading into that Osaka show, which I should note, that Osaka show did 596 fans. The Corkin Hall show did 4 fans shy of 1,100. Those are the best numbers they've done in those buildings this year. That is the best Osaka number 2 number that they have done since the start of the pandemic. And if my memory serves me correct, that actually beats Champion Gate Night 1 of 2020, which was days before COVID took over, but there were not any attendance restrictions in the building at that time. People were encouraged to stay home. They were encouraged to cheer quietly, but it was business as usual for the most part. So in terms of business, a really strong weekend for Dragon Gate, and this Benkei turn I thought was the highlight. This was a great angle. This, you know, we knew something was coming. I assumed that Ben and Yamato would win in Osaka, that they would lose the Twin Gate match, and then Ben would find a way to turn on Yamato so that these guys could go off to America and do their thing. Instead, we get Ben turning at this Corkin show after they lose in Osaka. To me, this was one of the more clever turns they've done. I don't remember an angle like this before where a guy changes gear mid-match and comes back and costs his original team the match the way Ben did here.
Yeah, and it was done in a way that I think everyone, because of how things were going, we had Shun and Hio kind of court him in the weeks leading up to the turn. So the natural inclination was, oh, he's going to go join his classmates. I mean, I bought in on this. I thought that heel unit, a class of 2016, would have been a next good step for Zebrats leaving the Kai era. But the way they performed it, especially the fact that high gold class remains a tweener unit, perfect. Perfect stuff. I think that he adds a lot to gold class, a unit that I felt like was on pretty, was in a critical state. I felt like that this is someone that you add in and it makes sense in a lot of ways. You really can't have a three-person unit. Four people still kind of tight there. But I just look at this, and now you can have like Doi and Ben tag teaming, and well, you still have Minoru and Rita around there. There's just a lot of combinations there, and it's something that I think is a good position for him given where he's at right now. And especially as he's like exploring this personality he suddenly discovered.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody who was at the Osaka show, and he sent a message to me and said, you know, that Ben was working the fan club stand today and that everyone was going up to him and doing his taglines with him. And then this person emphasized everyone was doing it and he was absolutely up for it. And if you've listened to the show this year, you might recall a few months ago, the fan club meet and greet during one of the Kobe Sambo Hall shows, I think this was in June, was Ben and Okuda. And I had somebody reach out to me and go, yo, there was nobody in their line. Nobody cared. Ben did some solo stuff in the fan club meet and greet, and it was a little more popular, but Ben and Okuda together, he was like, oh, yo, that died a death. That was an issue. Now, Ben all of a sudden has this personality that has caught on in a big way, and I am still in favor of just blowing up gold class and high end, and really, I can't rule out Ben turning on Minora and Minorita and Doi at some point and still making that class of 2016 thing happen. I think at this point it's a long shot, but I can't rule it out. But would you be in agreement with me in saying this is the most focus Ben has had since he won the Dreamgate belt 3 years ago?
Oh, easily so. And I mean, that's even including a time where he was Triangle Gate champion. Like, this is something that I did not buy fully into the full-fledged Ben push. I still don't think he's re-entering that level, but this is something that he's needed basically since he turned back face in May of 2019. You know, it was something that became very clear in his Dreamgate run was lack of personality, promo skills, charisma, and now he has it. And, you know, he's still, I don't think he's 30 yet. I mean, as long as, you know, his situation with the concussions is he doesn't like have more issues with that. It's something that like this is needed, that this gives him a little bit more life in my mind, I think. And I think it might not put him back in that main event picture, but it gets him in a position where he could comfortably step up there. So Ben is 30. He turns 31 on the 19th of October.
I'm still of the belief that come Gate of Destiny, the first show with cheering crowds, by the way, I don't think we mentioned that on this show, that Gate of Destiny this year will be a cheering show. I think that main event's going to be Ben versus Yoshioka. And I think it'll do a decent number, and I think Yoshioka will win, but I think it'll be a great match, a class of 2016 collision, because I am very much of the belief, especially after learning that Ben has caught on the way he has in Japan, I think he's one big win away from being right back in that main event scene.
And he's with someone that, with his character, at least for the short term, only will help him out there. Naruki Doi, with the exception of Misaki Mochizuki, considered like one of the most charismatic people in this company, he will play off that chicky, checky, checky thing. Like, he will clearly like play into it. And I think that'll just help bolster his confidence and let him grow with it. And I could see him now in that position, especially with a couple of months with him doing promos with Doi and Minorita around. I think that you can get him, get him there by October.
Yeah, I'm thrilled. I mean, you mentioned it just a second ago, but Ben was a Triangle Gate champion. He won the belts that Champion Gate in Osaka Night 1 2020 show, so right before COVID. So the timeline was a little weird anyways, but I remember being on this show 2 years ago and going, God, they're just not doing anything with Ben K. What's the deal with Ben K? Why is it like this? And then halfway through that rant, I was like, oh, wait, that's right. He's the Triangle Gate champion. Son of a bitch. I have to figure out a way to work myself out of this one now. Because it was just, it was such a forgetful run. And it's not that Ben hasn't had great matches. You know, I thought his Dreamgate challenge last year was really, really good. But it was a match that leading up to it, I thought was absolutely brutal. You know, the high-end versus high-end build created one of the most quiet atmospheres that I've ever seen from a Cork and Hall match, when it was, I think, Ben and Kagatora against Yamato and Dragon Kid, or maybe have those partners flip. But either way, you know, there was a real issue with post-Dreamgate Ben and what his character was going to be. And I, through this point, you know, prior to him really catching momentum by beefing with Yamato, I had never seen the, oh yeah, Ben is going to get a few wins here. Ben could win King of Gate. You know, I didn't look at him on that level anymore. And I came on the show when he was kind of middling away with Okuda in the spring and summer of this year. And I said, maybe we just have to accept that this is what Ben is now, and that he peaked very early. And it's not that he's a bad wrestler, but it seems like he has maxed out his potential, and now he has added this new layer onto his presence, and I am just absolutely delighted by it. I think he is doing great work. Would you recommend people watch either the Osaka main event, him and Yamato versus Dragon Daya and Madoka Kakuta, which I thought was good, not great, or the high-end versus gold-class angle and match from Cork and Hall? Either of those in your essential viewing list?
So I put the main event of Osaka 3.5. I thought that it was cool, kind of the openings there, but it just also, like the way that they kind of worked that match, I thought was kind of interesting, but then it just kind of slowed down from there. I went 3.75 on that high end versus gold class match. That's one I would watch. I thought the match was a whole lot of fun, even up to the turn. And it was something that you got to see a lot of Minorita kind of get his comeuppance. It was something that, in a way, kind of like, close the first chapter of Gold Class and started the second one with the Ben K turn. I'd recommend that one.
I still think we're in a universe right now where I think we're definitely going to say goodbye to Natural Vibes by the end of this year. I think there's a very realistic possibility that High End goes by the wayside by the end of the year. And I'm not entirely convinced that Gold Class is long for this world. So there's how many units are in the promotion right now? Let me do a quick count here. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4. And then I will count D Courage as one and M3K as one. Either way, I think we could lose 3 units in the next 3 months, and that is very exciting to think about.
Yeah, it's something that this unit shift has not really finished shifting, and it's kind of exciting to see where things are, because it definitely does feel that way. You brought up Natural Vibes here, and I think that's kind of the next natural like talking point here. Natural Vibes and Z-Brats is exploded. It is something that they have announced already a match for them for Dangerous Gate. The whole entire card for Dangerous Gate is out there. We'll talk about that more on Tuesday. But Z-Brats and Natural Vibes between Osaka and Korkin, this seems like that we are headed one way or another to a disbands match.
So let's talk about that Osaka match real quick. It started off as BB Hulk, Diamante, and Kai versus Big Boss, Shimizu, Jackie, Funky, Kame, and KZ. And it ended in a no contest with interference from both sides. And it turned into a 5-on-5 impromptu Hulk, Hyo, Kai, Diamante, and Shun Skywalker against KZ, Big Boss Shimizu, Jackie Funky Kame, Jason Lee, and UT. And I combined these segments into one match that is spreadsheet material for me. I ended up going 4.25 on this entire segment as a whole, because this is what I love. I mean, this is heated stuff. This is high-flying precision. This is what I think of when I think of Dragon Gate, and I'm just delighted at the work that these two teams are doing with one another right now.
Yeah, and especially on this Osaka show, like, this was Toriumon feeling, in that you had earlier on the night, there was a tag that was UT and Jason Lee versus Hyo and Shun, that UT got sneaky roll back in and beat the 20 count after Shun gets into it on the outside with KZ and Shimizu, who were not a part of the match. So this all flowed really well. And I was 3.75 when I combined it, so I don't slight you at all for it. But yeah, this is something that you started to get the passion and the fighting and with the precision, as you were saying here, that it's something that when it carried over to Corkin, I was pretty elated about it. They had the opener really was about them there. And then the way that it's now going to be set up at Dangerous Gate, and as we set up in a way that we know that Dangerous Gate's not going to be it, especially with Shun Skywalker out of the country, I guess the question is, that I've seen thrown around, Cage, I want to ask you, do you think they bring the Cage out for this feud? Saito said that he is waiting for the right feud to bring it out and hope to bring it out this year. Is Zebrats and Natural Vibes on the path to have that?
So this is where I have to answer an unanswerable question of, is Dragon Gate going to stay the course and there just happens to be cheering at this Osaka show, Gate of Destiny, or do I believe that they're going to spruce it up a little bit? Now, help me out. Help me fill in the gaps here. 2020, there was no Dead or Alive, but they did a cage match at Dangerous Gate.
Correct.
2021, was there a cage match?
Yes, that was the Upper House and Crayblay, SBK and Dragon
right.
Kid versus Kai and Yamato, where SBK lost his hair.
I'd like to rewatch that. I remember liking that. Okay. And then there was no cage this year. So they've got an opportunity to do it. They've done cage matches or a cage match in Osaka before. I think Vibes versus Zebrats is warranted doing a Dead or Alive unit disbands match. I'm all for that. I think that'd be great.
It's just something that the way they have set it up for this. So they set up this match at Dangerous Gate after the opener in Cork, and they don't set really a stipulation, but they name the sides because of, you know, Kung Fu Masters will be in play. There's no Shun, so it's making up what they have left to do this trios match, and it can't be it. Like, I can't imagine like this, especially without Shun being around. So my logic is that this is going to be a stopping point towards the ultimate conclusion down the line by the end of the year, having a disbands match. It's been a while since we've had a disbands match. The last one was Final Gate 2020.
A pretty good match, if you ask me.
Yeah, some would say a 5-star match.
Some would say, yeah, this is, you know, if it doesn't happen at Gate of Destiny, obviously any unit disbands match is big enough to fill a Corkin Hall as a worthy main event. And I think you do that in November, you know, you do that in December. You can maybe hold off. I mean, by all accounts, SB Kento is due to return to Japan in the first quarter of 2023. Now, that is unless he becomes a AAA superstar with Takuma Fujiwara, which could very easily happen. You know, I have no doubt that SB Kento is going to crush it in Mexico. As we're recording this, he's hours away from making his American debut. I think that's going to go very well for him. But I am assuming they will have Zebrats disband. Well, actually, I think they can get away with Zebrats disbanding without SB Kento there. Do you think they have to wait for him to get back, or can they pull the plug while he's away? Because that could be used for the story.
I don't think Zebrats will lose the disbands match.
Oh, I that's true. What am I? Yes, you're right. What am I thinking?
Yeah. New listeners, heal units are whatever and two in disbands matches across Dragon Gate, and that two is really a one. So yeah, I think that SBK is not as central of a figure enough to hold off for this. I think Shun is. Shun, you can't do this without Shun. But I think SBK, I mean, hey, he's facing Davey Richards next weekend. Who knows what what SBK we could be getting back.
The world of MLW never stops, and I am absolutely delighted that SB Kento versus Shun Skywalker, or SB Kento versus Davey Richards is a match that's happening.
Did you know how frustrated I am about this case?
Why are you frustrated? Because we will never see it, because I still haven't seen La Estrella's match from MLW from like June. I don't think that's aired on TV yet.
The one time that Dragon Gate wrestlers will be within driving distance of me, I will be out of town and actually in good matchups. Actually, like SBK versus Davey Richards for the national weight, then whatever, one of their dumb titles. That's the kind of match that SBK needs to be having on this excursion. Myron Reed versus Shun Skywalker. I mean, that's someone that Shun can base for and make look like $1 million. And
look,
sadly, I'm not going to be in attendance for that.
As somebody that has reached out to a certain number of U.S. indie companies, Myron Reed versus Shun Skywalker was a match that I pitched. It was not a match that I pitched to MLW, but I gave some people a list of guys that I would have wrestle Shun, and Myron Reed was on the list. I think that'll be a really good match as well.
Yeah, no, that would be really solid as well. Do you have any other thoughts about Zebrats and Natural Vibes? It seems like that they are in the building point here, and it's been really hot. I'm totally on board with this unit feud here, at least for me.
The thing that I think is worth noting as I bump my microphone, I'm so sorry to headphones wearers. I hope that wasn't a giant noise. But the thing that I think is worth noting is, in the same way that last year, you know, we raved about RED versus Masquerade and the chemistry that those two units had with one another, Zebrats versus Natural Vibes has carried that torch this year. And for the first half of the year, they were very athletic, very fast-paced, you know, relatively intense multi-man matches. The great thing over the last month, ever since Shun Skywalker has really ramped up his aggression towards Vibes and his ideology that Natural Vibes must come to an end, is that these matches are being worked with far more aggression than they used to have. These are teams wrestling like their units are about to be on the line, and I really like that. So if you're burnt out on these listings, if you're burnt out on these names wrestling one another, give some of these matches a look. I thought the Korakuen opener was very good. I went 3 3/4 on it. And obviously, I love the Osaka stuff. So give this a watch, even if you're burnt out on it.
Absolutely. Support for Open the Voice Gate comes to us from HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking fun, easy, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. In case, do you have a packed schedule this fall?
I am booked. My mother was on the phone with me last week, and she said, is there a good weekend in September that I can come up and see you? And on the phone with my mother, I said, no, there's not.
Well, the great thing about HelloFresh is if you have this packed schedule, HelloFresh has your meals covered with weekly selections of 30 recipes and 70 convenience items, all delivered straight to your door. It is almost fall here, Kay. There's some, I like fall flavors. You know, you can enjoy the freshest fall flavors with HelloFresh, with ripe, just-picked produce that travels from the farm to your door in less than a week. Fresh produce. I mean, I'm a gourd guy, Case. So I'm
if I know Mike Spears, that is a gourd guy.
I'm a gourd guy, so I'm excited to see all of the various zucchinis and, you know, squashes and pumpkin stuff we could see. But the thing that's got my eye this week, Case, on this menu is the scrambled egg sandos with Gouda, sweet potato rounds, and arugula salad. Hey, sometimes you want to find a way to eat your scrambled eggs. And I'll tell you, like, Gouda might be one of my top two cheeses. It's like that. And I do like buffalo mozzarella. But this is right up my speed. And it's a fresh new recipe from HelloFresh. What are you looking at this week, Case?
You know, I'm dating again, Mike. And so I'm looking all over this menu. I was on a picnic with a woman a few nights ago. I missed AEW Dynamite because a very nice lady wanted to take me on a picnic. And I'm not much for eating on the ground. I'm not much for eating outside. I am one.
You're not a farm animal.
No. You know what kind of meal I like? One with a table and a chair. Novel concept, I know. But I am a man above all else that's a little tight for cash right now. And so I need cost-efficient meals. I need something like the epic beef nacho mac and cheese that I can have delivered to my doorstep. And not only can I bring it on a picnic and have a lovely, healthy meal with a woman that I quite enjoy, we can also make it in my GD apartment. So it is a double date with two people. We are cooking, we are feasting, and it is all thanks to our friends at HelloFresh.
I just noticed that they had these sesame soy beef bowls, and I just like look at that and I'm like, all right, you've got nearly every flavor I like in this thing. We got good rice, we got sriracha, sesame soy. That is my thing. Under 20 minutes, quick prep, easy. I just love the fact that when I look at HelloFresh, they tell me immediately, this is what you're dealing with. It's going to be quick, it's going to be easy, and you'll get it done real quick. And with HelloFresh, not only do you get the opportunity to do that, if you use our promo code with HelloFresh and go to HelloFresh.com/VOW16 and use code VOW16 for 16 free meals and set across 7 boxes, you'll get 3 free gifts. So that is HelloFresh.com/VOW16 and code VOW16 for 16 free meals across 7 boxes and 3 gifts. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit.
You're a gourd guy and a soy boy. Is that what I'm hearing?
I mean, dude, I'm 36 now. I gotta, like, be careful. I've actually started caring about dietary fiber for the first time in my life.
Yeah, that I could certainly care about my diet more. I'm definitely missing an opportunity by not caring about what I eat more. But, you know, I drink a Pepsi at 6:15 in the morning every day, and that is just how the day gets started.
You know, sometimes you just got to go with it. My favorite thing from this week, Case, was we finally had fathers and sons teaming up. Masaki Mochizuki and Mochizuki Jr. finally had their face off against Ishin Ohashi and Ishin Riki. And out of that, we have another thing coming at us with Dangerous Gate, as Don Fuji will be joining the Ohashis. In the angle he posed as the younger sister of Ataka Huzumi, but they have announced it is Don Fuji at Dangerous Gate. But let's talk about the storyline paying off with Ishin Ohashi getting his first ever direct pinfall less than 1 year after his debut, and it's against Masaki Mochizuki. I love this match. This was my favorite thing of the week.
Phenomenal. I came on here last month, and I was very concerned that you weren't going to be as into this match as I was, and luckily you matched my enthusiasm and just thinking that doing Masaki Mochizuki and Mochizuki Jr. versus Ishin Ohashi and his father, Ishin Riki, that just by itself was a very cool match. And I, for as much as I love the youthfulness of Dragon Gate and the way that they push forward, I don't care about that in context like this. I just thought this was such a cool idea, and I'm so glad that this company was able to do it. And then for them to come out here and for this match to actually be very good, before we get to Ishin Ohashi, I can't believe Ishin Riki moved around as well as he did.
He ruled. I loved Ishin Riki. Like sincerely. Like the sumo slaps and everything like this. So yeah, he's 61 years old, but he moved pretty good and he was imposing and he looked cool as hell. Like, what else do I want from old wrestlers?
He's in better
wrestler?
Shape. Ishin Riki at 61 years old is in better shape than most North American wrestlers, either TV or otherwise.
Tony Khan, listen to us. We're going to talk to Ishin Riki, but we're going to start the 050 division, and you're going to bring him in here because I want to see Ishin Riki versus Billy Gunn.
Oh my God. Oh boy. Here's the thing. I enjoy the Acclaimed. Nice act. I feel like I don't know. I did not enjoy their match with Swerve and Keith Lee at All Out. I didn't think it was that good of a match. And then did you guys think about calling an audible? Like, no, I'm happy with the decision they made. Maybe I'm out to lunch, but I was okay with everything that happened there. I didn't think that was a very good match, but Ishin Riki and Ishin Ohashi versus the Mochizukis. Oh, this was just so much fun. I'm just so glad this match happened. I think this is a cool match to happen in the history of pro wrestling. I just think this is a very neat concept. And the fact that, you know, I knew obviously, you know, it's not like Masaki Mochizuki has bad matches. Mochizuki Jr. has been blowing me away, especially his work specifically with Ishin Ohashi, who is now 1 year into his career, or rather just a few weeks shy, and was good when he came in, was pretty consistent throughout the spring, and then as soon as his brother announced his retirement, Ishin really kicked it into overdrive and made sure that he was not forgotten about and that he could stand alone as a singles competitor. And I think he's done a brilliant job of that. And it was so satisfying seeing him get a win over not Mochizuki Jr., which I think is relevant to mention. They are holding off on that eventual victory. But to get a victory over Masaki Mochizuki, this whole thing prior to Don Fuji coming out in a dress, which we can discuss in a minute, this whole thing was so incredibly satisfying.
Yeah, and it's something that, like, all the flowers to Ishin Riki. I mean, he's someone who's retiring in a month, hasn't really wrestled consistently since the end of WAR, but he was not embarrassing in this whatsoever. He was a lot of fun. Ishin was the star here. Ishin at every moment just kind of command the presence of the ring. And that's considering that who he's in the ring with here. And it's something that, as someone who was a little bit more partial towards him over his brother, it was so satisfying to see him do that side Russian leg sweep into a pinfall and be like, all right, the monkey's off his back here. And it was so satisfying. And they did save that. They did save the direct fall. And now that's up at stake at Dangerous Gate. And that's something really, really interesting to see. Like, could you see a world that Ishin Riki might be Triangle Gate champion 2 weeks before he retires? Because I can't get that thought out of my mind. I might actually do that. And that's why I don't book this company.
I think Ishin Riki is taking a Saikyo high kick to the head, and then Mochizuki Jr. is pinning him, and that will be the last we see of him, which is all we need. I think anything more than these two matches is a mistake. He's not a regular wrestler. He doesn't need to be a regular wrestler. He needs to come in. He did a great job in this tag match. He needs to pick his spot to this Triangle Gate match, bow to the crowd, and be gone. If he does that, I am going to think back lovingly on this angle for many years to come. Anything more, him beating M3K, I would say that is a disgrace. I think that would not be as bad as Muto over like a Kiyomiya per se, but Ishin Riki winning, I would have a huge issue with.
I guess. I mean, you're right. You're absolutely right here. Maybe I just, whenever I see an old man just like do a sumo chop to another old man's chest, and the person who takes it acts like it's death. I get, my brain goes, you know, my heart goes a flutter a little bit there.
It's a wonderful spot. If you were a wrestler, I would imagine you would wrestle like 61-year-old Ishin Riki.
Oh, I mean, I would have, wearing bright pink and dark blue, like great look. I mean, tan is like the most tanned wrestler I've seen in the last year.
Like WrestleMania level tan.
Hey, he had to start getting the base going with his retirement match coming up, guys. You know, I mean, you want to test it out underneath the bright lights of Corkin just to make sure.
Yeah, it was really phenomenal stuff. Let me ask you, because if my memory serves me correct, the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame, or not Hall of Fame rather, but the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Rookie of the Year, the opposite side of the spectrum, that voting is from September through September. So obviously the Ahashis were eligible this year, and we would have just passed the point where their eligibility period ended. Ishin Ihashi versus Takuma Fujiwara, and we'll make this a triple threat and throw in Mochizuki Jr. Give me your power rankings on these guys in terms of Observer Rookie of the Year 1 year into their careers.
So using the criteria and putting myself in the mind of the electorate, I think you would have to go Fujiwara, Mochizuki Jr., Ahashi.
Okay, I'm stunned by that because Ishin Ihashi is your boy.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about, like, personally, my personal thing would be Fujiwara, Ishin, then Jr. But I'm just thinking about it, people will see Mochizuki there. They'll be like, oh, that's that Dragon Gate guy. That must be his son. And I think that's a more of a leg up than being the son of the smallest Sekitori sumo wrestler in history and WAR scummer, you know?
You realize that Jake Paul is going to get more Rookie of the Year votes than Takuma Fujiwara, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I think that I'm well on the record on what I think for people who vote for that kind of stuff deserve to get happen to them.
I'm glad we're on the same page, Matt. I'm glad we're on the same page about Fujiwara still being number one. I'm going to cut you off there and save you some trouble. Yes, for as good as Ishin Ihashi has been over the last few months in particular, I still don't really think he touches what Takuma Fujiwara did in January, February, March, April, and May of this year. And plus, I, although he hasn't had a great match in Mexico, I think he has been a delight in all of the footage that I've seen. So it's, for me, it's Fujiwara, Ihashi, Mochizuki Jr. Like I said, you know, 2 weeks ago, the fact is Dragon Gate has realistically four legitimate Rookie of the Year contenders with Minorita, with obviously Fujiwara, Mochizuki Jr., and Ishin Ihashi, and that should be celebrated. That is phenomenal stuff.
Yeah, no, it's something that this is such a great time, you know, and it's something that I'm glad that this got the semi-main event, and I'm glad that like they put the trust in these two guys. I mean, yeah, Mochizuki was there. Yeah, Ishin Riki was there, but you're talking about two guys who have combined just over like 15 months of experience semi-main eventing here and now being thrust there. It's been super, super exciting to see. And then there was that post-match case that you wanted to talk about.
Well, and I should know, you know, this was the only thing that was announced for this show. Now, obviously, I'm not saying that Ishin Ihashi and Mochizuki Jr. alone drew 1,100 people to this building, but it was the one thing that was announced, and this show did not bomb. And I think that is very telling for the future of Dragon Gate that these guys are going to be okay. Lead us through the post-match angle, please, Mike.
So, afterwards, there was a lot of crap talk leading up until Ishin Ihashi said, well, you're a Triangle Gate champion, and I pinned you, so I get to claim the next title match. And they said, oh, well, you have your father. Who else are you going to team with? And he's like, well, and then Mochizuki made comments about his mother, Atako Huzomi, Juliana, Hozumi, I think it was her LLPW gimmick. She came down to the ring and very charmingly said, "Well, Mr. Mochizuki, I think that if this happens, your wife needs to wrestle." And Mochizuki very sheepishly said, "Well, you're a former wrestler and she's a civilian, so I don't think that would be fair." And then Hozumi said, "Oh, no, I'm not going to wrestle without that happening. So instead, actually, my younger sister is a pro wrestler and she will wrestle as well." And out came Don Fuji dressed up in the Juliana Hozumi getup and will be teaming with her nephew and brother-in-law at Dangerous Gate. Again, I would like to state that when they announced the full card, it's not as, I think it was Juliana Fujiko. It is as Don Fuji. So it's fair to assume that this was just a bit for this angle.
Mike, this is a famously not horny show.
Absolutely not.
But Mrs. Ihashi? Okay. Okay, did not see that coming. Oh, what a lady.
It's an attractive family. I assume that the genes weren't just from Ishinriki, you know?
My goodness, I was not expecting that. That's really, really quite the looker. Seems like a very, very nice lady. As for
the
Don
crowd
Fuji,
was cracking up with her.
I'm so glad we had English commentary for this that could translate, because it was a great angle.
Yeah, but Don Fuji coming out in drag here.
Yeah, then Don Fuji came out in a dress. And look, if he wrestles like Don Fuji, this is something I talked about on the show a month ago. I really want to see Don Fuji get involved with M3K. I think that's a really interesting angle, given Fuji's relationship with Masaki Mochizuki. If it's just if it's Ishinriki, Ishinihashi, and Don Fuji, great. I think that match is going to kick ass. If I have to deal with gimmick Don Fuji, I am going to hate it, and I'm going to complain about it at length on this show.
I just think that it's something that they pop the crowd in that set, and that's what I'm hoping for. It's something that's such a nice challenge match. And again, we'll get more into this next week. When you think about Kanda and Fuji were the opponents for the Ihashi brothers in their debut match last year at Dangerous Gate. Like, it comes full circle. I like that.
That's a great point. That was a great debut match. I was just reading my review, and I very rarely enjoy my writing after the fact, but I was reading my review of that show last night, reading up on the Ihashi match specifically, and you know, I said these guys are going to be very good. Get in now or suffer the consequences of being late. And I would like to think I've been right on the money that Ishinihashi has actually been better than expected. And I thought Ricky was on the same pathway before he retired, which is such a bummer.
Well, speaking of rookies, Case, Kaito Nagano has been all over the shows. We got the first match of him with English commentary on Thursday as he faced BB Hulk and got completely creamed, but we got to see a good bit of Nagano between this and Osaka. Of course, a lot more in Osaka because he wasn't creamed by BB Hulk here. Well, let's do a temp check of Kaito Nagano as he's finishing his first big loop going into the pay-per-view. His first big show's coming up and he's assigned to a match.
I'm going to sneeze, so give me your thoughts real fast.
Yeah, so I think that it's something that there's going to be a... His size, like Hayakawa / Minorita, is going to be something. Obviously, Minorita has otherworldly charisma in the fountain and lucked into a gimmick that has let people get over that. With Nagano, I don't think you're going to do that two things. So quick, back to back. I mean, he's the dropkick kid. I mean, that's kind of what his character is. He does like 10 dropkicks in a row, does not slow down whatsoever. Each 10 look excellent, and then he gets killed. He gets creamed, and he's great at it. And it's something that I'll be interested to see how things progress with him. But it's something that, I mean, he's playing his role well. And I think that there is a place for him. But it'll be interesting to see what he makes of it coming out of his first like full loop around the country.
Yeah, I think the Hulk match is worth watching. He is a very interesting kid in the sense that I don't know what to do with him. Now, granted, he's been on the roster less than a month. I don't have to figure out long-term plans for him at this point. But it is so interesting to watch a guy that is really small, even on a small roster, who makes his living throwing dropkicks at this point and taking an absolute beating. And he has taken an absolute beating, and I think he's done it very well. I've been entertained every time I've seen him, notably the Kai match, which was his debut, which I thought was excellent, and then the Ben K match on the house show the following day. The Hulk match is in that same boat where I just really liked the way that he approached the ring, that he was fearless, and that, you know, eventually he just got absolutely killed. And I think that's going to do him well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be fun to see it progress because we can't figure it out at this point. It's not like Ben K where you look at it and you're like, oh yeah, no, we see where it's going for him. Or like Shun Skywalker when things turned on, you're like, okay, this is a player. We just can't tell this far in with Kaito Nagano. It is also worth noting at this time, this was announced earlier today, but this happened yesterday on the 8th. Dragon Gate Future Class of 2022 member Takuma Nishikawa officially made his in-ring debut on the 8th in Mexico City against Ricky Marvin. They have posted photos of this. This was the guy that was easily the largest student they've had like since Benkei. And it's very interesting seeing a photo right next to him with Ricky Marvin because Ricky Marvin is not that tall. And Takuma Nishikawa kind of towers over him.
Yeah, he towers over Ricky Marvin. I should also note, and this just speaks to Ricky Marvin, who is obviously a guy who spent some time in Toriumon in 2000 and 2001. He was KZ's debut opponent, and now a new generation of Dragon Gate also debuts against this guy. That is pretty impressive for Ricky Marvin.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a cool thing to have there. Other big topics from this weekend. I don't know why it's taken this long for me to get into it. The main event scene has crystallized. They've used a lot over the two shows, especially in Cork, and building up Eita taking on Yuki Yoshioka at Dangerous Gate for the Open the Dream Gate title and defeating him cleanly with the El Numero Uno, making him submit, cutting a promo afterwards saying, "I just got you to quit. How are you champion if you're quitting?" And then Yoshioka, after he regained consciousness, basically started growling and shouting that he would beat him and that he would sell out all the buildings because that's what he sees for Dragon Gate. So how do you feel about this Dream Gate picture and all the stuff they've done to lead up? I know you don't like Road 2 matches, but how are you feeling about this?
It's not that I don't like Road 2 matches. I think we've been in a situation lately in Dragon Gate where the Road 2 matches have been bad. This match, and I wrote this in my review over at voicesofwrestling.com, this match caused me physical pain because we were so close to getting the Eita that I have hoped and dreamed about for years at this point. An Eita that can beat you with technique instead of a steel chair. The closing stretch with Yuki Yoshioka I thought was so good, and I was already excited for this match, but I became so much more excited seeing Eita dip back into the Fountain of Youth a little bit and pull out stuff from him that we would have seen in 2014, 2015, and 2016, eventually tapping out Yoshioka. God, I thought this was great. I am into Eita versus Yoshioka. I'm into Yoshioka as champion, and I'm into Yoshioka as champion going forward after beating Eita. I really thought their chemistry in this match was so strong.
Yeah, and that's something that in the Outpost shows, like even in Osaka, their matchups have been really good. Like their face-offs in those matches have been really solid. I like the idea of submitting Yoshioka. I like this here because this happens less than 2 weeks out of the pay-per-view, happening in Tokyo, and he cuts this promo afterward just wanting to destroy this guy. That's how you sell tickets there. That's how you get people over to Otaku to go see this match. Like I thought that everything about this match was expertly done for how they want to build up Yoshioka, because now at least as of today, I think he's going to go in there, he's going to definitively beat Eita, and he's going to get a lot out of it, and I think a lot of that came from this match.
They are putting Yoshioka in an extreme position to succeed, and if he doesn't succeed, it is going to be a giant issue. Now luckily for him, after the doomsday that was the fallout of Ultimo Dragon's 35th anniversary in Kobe World, and some people going, it's, you know, the Dragon Gate I know is dead, and I'm not sold on this guy. Well, all they've done is set, you know, granted COVID records, but records for attendance in these buildings. Everything has been up from August to September, and I assume that will continue. So Yoshioka as champion has been a draw. And I think putting him against Eita, you're exactly right, having this go down in Tokyo when the pay-per-view is in Tokyo, this is all really strong stuff. And I think Yoshioka is wrestling like a guy who is a top dog. He is not the primary focus. You know, you still have Mochizuki Jr. and Ishinihashi pulling a lot of focus. You have Zebrats as an overall presence pulling a lot of focus. You have the Kung Fu Masters, which please mark an asterisk next to their name. I want to make a point on Kung Fu before we go. I know we're running out of time here. But there's just a lot to like with the way Yuki Yoshioka has positioned himself. And maybe this is gross of me because I'm not a wrestler. I normally don't like zooming in on matches to this close of a degree. But he goes up for the frog splash near the end of the match. Eita gets his knees up. Maybe it just hurt incredibly bad, and that's why he made the face that he did. But I will choose to dive into the theater of it and dive into the suspension of disbelief and say the way Yoshioka sold Eita getting his knees up on that frog splash, I thought was absolutely marvelous. I mean, this was a top-notch performance from both guys. I am into this main event.
Yeah, and we got to see all three of D-Courage in this match. We got to see, well, D-Courage and Kakuta. And you wrote about this in the review, but something that really like has crest, and we've talked about this, this was the best move possible for Madoka Kakuta. He just looks, he looks like $1 million right now. He looks like the guy that came into Dead or Alive 2021 as like the youngest ever Dream Key holder. And he looks like he's sure of himself. He looks confident. And he's good. And like the chemistry between the three of them has been excellent. It's just something that I think has been such an addition to it. And I think it's them learning mistakes from 2019 where you could not do a whole lot with Shun and Benkei just as those two. Well, you add in Kakuta here and suddenly you get to have a champions and challengers cork and main event with six guys. And they go out there and they have a 4¼-star match. And now the two big title matches at the pay-per-view have been incredibly well built on that. It's fine that there's no TV between now and the 19th, because I feel like this was the note to go out on.
I said on this show 1 month ago, play the tape. I said after that August Corkin show when Kakuta became an assistant to D-Courage, I said this is going to be the best opportunity of his career. Shun's going to America. Yamato's going to America. SP Kento's out of the picture. La Estrella is gone. Takuma Fujiwara is gone. In Drangate as a whole, you've got a brand new unproven Open the Dreamgate champion. You have... It's not a crisis mode by any means, or at least logical people weren't thinking of Drangate as being in crisis, but you have a lot of question marks in this promotion. You have a lot of things that people aren't sure how they're going to turn out, how things are going to play out. And Kakuta was given a guarantee of if he succeeds as this the third wheel in D-Courage, it is going to do him wonders, and that is exactly what he has done. He has crushed this opportunity. He has knocked every one of his matches out of the park. What did I say when he returned from injury in May? For the first few months he was there, I was like, Mike, I keep on forgetting that Kakuta is in matches that he's in. Like, there will be a six-man, and it'll be Problem Dragon and... Takashi Yoshida, and they will pull more focus than Kakuta does. Like, what has happened to this guy who wrestled for the Dreamgate belt in May of 2021? He had no confidence except for the occasional rare match where he would wrestle really aggressively and then it would come out. But ever since he has joined D-Courage as this unaffiliated assistant, oh my God, he's like a different human. And he's wrestling, again, not against Scrubs, not against Problem Dragon, not against Takashi Yoshida. He's wrestling with Yuki Yoshioka and Dragon Daya, and he looks every bit as important as they do. I am thrilled for the kid. I am delighted at his performance. This is the best case scenario. This is him making the most of this opportunity, and I am so happy with how he looks in D-Courage right now.
It's just like night and day. Like that August Corkin, and before that, it was, as you were saying, just very frustrating to watch and just kind of just like, man, is this it? Like, did he like lose confidence with what happened there? And understandably so, like given his age and what happened. But
I was a month or two away. Sorry to cut you off, but I was a month or two away from just going, I don't think it's going to happen. In the same way that at the start of this year, I really bought into Strong Machine J and I said, Mike, he is figuring it out. We are watching in real time a guy figure out what he is doing in this profession. I was, in the same way that I was in on Strong Machine J, I was almost that out on Madoka Kakuta. I did not think he was going to be able to get himself back to the level that he was at, or at least without another repackaging, without another delay, without another drastic change. But Madoka Kakuta, as a babyface, has commanded the room over the last month, and I think that is phenomenal. I am stoked for the kid.
And there's like something that I like about him with Daya as a tag team. This Diaz team has been a lot of fun. It's been completely different, and it's something that he has like made himself like a just irreplaceable part of D-Courage at this point. Over a period of a month. Over a period of a month, it's like, oh yeah, I want to see all three of these guys and I can't see them break up anytime soon. And it's exciting, and it's exactly what is needed from someone who really was looked like that he was treading water, to be polite about that. Case, those were the topics I had for this week. Was there anything that I left out that you want to touch on before we got out of here?
Real quick, two things. One, I forgot to mention this when we were talking about Natural Vibes, but my theory of Vibes disbanding and Kung Fu Masters becoming a countrywide unit is looking more and more realistic as they gave Ho-Ho Loon his first win in Cork and Hall. And I think if you're going to do Kung Fu Masters around the country and not just this gimmick unit in Kobe, it's not that Ho-Ho has to matter. It's not that he has to be pushed. He does have to have some level of credibility. And him getting a win in Tokyo, I do not think was a mistake. And I think we'll be seeing more of him wrestling on main cards and wrestling as the Kung Fu Master elsewhere in the country. Any thoughts on that before I hit my final topic?
Yeah, this ruled. Like, this was something that, like, Ho-Ho getting the win here and, like, Jay on commentary going, like, wait, that's Ho-Ho's first win. And just like the way that him and Genki were handling that, that was, like, one of those, like, heartwarming moments. And you're absolutely right. Like, he needs credibility. Like, that's the exact word about this, because you look at Kung Fu Masters now with four, and you cannot have Jackie and Jason be the only two, like, people with any sort of purchase. Like, it just does not work. This kind of unit, especially with Jackie and Jason being those two, like, it has to have, you have to have backup. Shenlong 3 is not going to be that. It's very clear that's not going to be like that. And so Ho-Ho needs to, like, start looking credible. And I think that's a path along the way. And I guess, like, the question I pose to you, like, in this theory, this working theory, that Shun has at least tipped this off, Case, so you're in good company there. Who would you pick to, like, join them at this point? Like, assuming Natural Vibes goes away and Kung Fu Masters become a nationwide thing.
Okay, I thought of this as you were talking about it. And this does not solve the problem of needing more credible wrestlers. If anything, it creates a speed bump. But could you see Kaito Nagano being a Kung Fu Master?
Yeah, I could. I could. It doesn't. Yeah, like, you're right. Like, the person, like, when you're proposing this, he said speed bump. I thought you were going to say Takashi Yoshida, and I was going to go, hell
no,
yeah.
No. I'm happy with what he's doing now. He doesn't need to do anything more. Takashi Yoshida, you take it easy, my man.
Get back on commentary.
Please. Oh, my God. Yeah, I don't know. Nagano's the name that jumps out at me. Is there anybody for you that you think would be a really good fit there?
It's hard because it's a themed unit. And, like, it's something that, like, you have to hit that theme or else it's just not going to work. And that limits things. So Nagano, he's so young that you can just plug him in there. Fuda, I mean, he already has the kickboxer thing. I think that can kind of fit in pretty well. But again, credibility. I don't know who you add, like, at that point. Like, that's the thing I was asking you, because other than Yoshida, that's a funny person put in the unit. I don't know how you expand past four with them, other than, like, adding in rookies.
What about Dragon Kid?
That would be interesting.
Jason, Jackie, Dragon Kid trios matches?
Oh, I'm there for the matches. I'm just imagining Dragon Kid as a Kung Fu Master, and that would be interesting.
Obviously, you do the Big Boss Shimizu trial run. You do Kung Fu Master Shimizu. There's options out there.
Kagatora? Kagatora's out looking for new units again?
God damn. Oh my God. We're going to have to another Kagatora's looking for a unit. He could join anybody. Who's it going to be? Like, he's Zion Williamson when really he's more RJ Barrett. It's just like, he's actually more Cam Reddish. That is a joke for John Hernandez and John Hernandez only. And even then, I don't know if he's going to get it. Yeah, I think there's guys out there. I really like the idea of Dragon Kid joining that unit.
Yeah. Like, he actually might be the person now that you've introduced that, because you're not gonna put Yamato in that kind of unit, and
that'd be awesome if that's what Yamato pivots to post high end. I will go back and delete audio of everything bad I've ever said about Yamato. I think that'd be so much fun, but that is not happening.
Yeah. A guy known for his grappling now is doing Kung Fu. The Ace doing that would be that would be a great one off thing, you know.
Real quick, actually, okay, so I was going to mention, and I'll just throw this in here real quick, the ETU show, that New York-based indie, they are running Friday night tonight as we're recording. They are going to be live on IWTV with that SB Kento versus La Estrella match. So we will talk about that next week, but that is on IWTV tonight, Friday night the 9th, SB Kento versus La Estrella. Mike, we have to talk about, before we go, this is my bad. I didn't have this in the run sheet just because I've been so busy today. We have to talk about this Dragon Gate Noah show real quick.
Okay.
Yeah, I that was the appropriate reaction.
I mean, if we weren't actually going to talk about it, I would have ended the episode at me saying okay, and that would have done it.
No, we got to talk about it real fast because I've got a point to make. So this show is going to take place from Cork and Hall on, what is the date here? Do you have the date for the, it's on 11/11. So let's go, we'll spend more time talking about this in the future. I do want to get this off my chest now. I think the fact that they're doing this show with the Yamato is insane. When the Noah guy showed up in Osaka, which I think, I don't know. Let me justify it by saying, I think for some people this is a really big deal, but as people that look at this show through a Dragon Gate lens, it is largely a who cares. When they showed up in Osaka, I was actually kind of into it. I was like, oh, this is great. They'll do this show when Shun and Yamato are out of the country, and this will be a show that will do a nice little number, and then Yamato and Shun will come back, and it'll be business as usual. Instead, they are building this show around Yamato versus Seki Yoshioka, and quite frankly, I just think Yamato is above this. I think it's a really bad look that he is on this show.
Yeah,
He's a five-time Dreamgate champion. I know it's a promotion full of juniors. The entire roster, other than Takashi Yoshida, are juniors. But Yamato, for all intents and purposes, is presented as the closest thing Dreamgate has to a heavyweight. Some people could say, oh, well, what about Best of the Super Juniors? Well, I would be annoyed if Yamato was in the 2023 Best of the Super Juniors as well. I think that would be beneath him.
Yeah, it's just like... I think that, for one, let me look at how Noah is doing in Cork, and I don't think it's great. It's just something that when, like, I take a step back and look at a case, like, Yamato, absolutely, like, him doing this match, like, that's basically saying, we think we need Yamato to sell tickets, if you ask me. Like, that's what that screams to me.
Yeah, which I would think the overall concept of the show, you could at least merge some fan bases there, because as we've heard, you know, the Noah fan base and the Dragon Gate fan base have nothing in common. They might both like Eita, but it's largely two separate crowds of people that are into Eita or into Masaki Mochizuki. And I think you could get them in the building for this show, but my tone on this is now more of annoyance than anything, because I think this would be the perfect thing to do when you have stars, and I mean stars, in Yamato and Skywalker out of the country. The fact that they're waiting for Yamato to get back, I don't know. I think this is a bad look for Dragon Gate. I think he is so far above this sort of thing. I don't like the fact that he's wrestling Seki Yoshioka. If he was wrestling like Katsuhiko Nakajima, or if they were finally going to do that Yamato versus Kano singles match, all right, I'm rubbing my hands together. I'm into this. I'm the Birdman gif all of a sudden. But the fact that he is wrestling Seki Yoshioka, I am super bummed they allowed this to happen.
Yeah, so when I say, like, this is a way for Noah to sell tickets, just looking most recent numbers here, and you can make your determination from there. They did not go clap okay for the G1 victory, or the N1 victory, before I say this. Just want to make sure.
I am 99% sure that was a clap crowd.
Yeah, so Corkin for Dragon Gate did 1096 on Thursday, 3 weeks ago, during the G1... the N1 victory day 6, they did 609 for Noah. And then the day before that was 584.
The finals of the N1?
I thought the finals were at Budokan.
Okay. What headlined that Korkin show?
Headlining that Korkin show, Masato Tanaka defeating Kazuyuki Fujita.
That's a shitty main event. That deserves 600 fans.
I mean, you're not going to hear me say anything contrary to that.
Well, Mike, they're actually the second biggest promotion in Japan. I don't know if you've heard or not, but because they put a sprinkle of people in Budokan Hall, they're actually far bigger than Dragon Gate is. Their business is doing far better.
Actually, it was Edeon Arena Osaka, and it was 2,988 there for it. Still not a great number.
And what was the finals? I'm sorry, in one, spoilers ahead, you know, skip ahead 15 seconds, but what was the finals for that?
Oh, it was Kiyomiya defeating Hideki in 33 minutes.
Okay.
All right, after the great Muda was in a 22-minute match.
Oh my god. Oh, I'd rather watch Billy Stark's head hit the post.
Yeah, at least that way it's only 22 minutes and you get 22 minutes and 5 seconds back, you know?
Like, she was whimpering and her father said, let her wrestle.
Yeah, I didn't really, until you brought it up, think about Yamato doing this, but it is just dire. I don't like, I'm glad that this show happens for like people like Fuda, Mochizuki Jr., you know, get more ring time like that. I'm never going to say, don't go work there. That's not when you're that place your career. They need the ring time. But
well, yeah, that six man is cool. It's Rio Fuda, Madoka Kakuta, and Masaki Jr., or sorry, Mochizuki Jr., against Yano, Fujimura, and Inamura from NOAH. That's a cool six man. I have no issue with that. It's the headline stuff is going to really bother me. I hope to God, like, Ben doesn't end up on this show. Like, I don't even think Shun or Diamante should be on this show. I really think it's a bad look for Yamato to be here. I'm very annoyed by that, and I don't think that opinion is going to change anytime soon.
Yeah, no, I totally get, you're getting me annoyed about that. I'm now totally thinking, like, what is he doing facing this bum? You know? Like, and I like Saki Yoshioka, but still.
So this show is 11-11, and if I look ahead on the Dragon Gate schedule, they are running Korakuen Hall 2 days before. They're running Wednesday the 9th in Korakuen. The Dragon Gate solo Korakuen will outdraw this joint show, correct?
Easily so. And on top of that, I think that the fact that they have this beforehand is a good thing for Dragon Gate.
I'm fascinated by this. I think that Dragon Gate show is going to outdraw the joint show. And
easily.
It should.
Yeah. No, I'm totally with you on that. Yeah. Now I'm kind of in a bummer right now.
Yeah. Well, this is where we got to go. We're out of time, and I'm going to leave you feeling depressed for the rest of your night.
All right. Well, that's going to do it. Thank you all for bearing with us this week. We've just both, I've been dealing with a dog going violent out of both ends. Case has been busy. It's just been crazy for us, but we'll be back next Tuesday. Well, I'm going to watch a CTU. Match
oh
live,
yeah, no, that's on the run sheet. I am excited to watch SB Kento versus La Estrella in an indie, and I will check in. I saw photos of it in real time. I was absolutely delighted to see SB Kento and Takuma Fujiwara and AAA. I have not seen that footage yet, but that will change by the next time we talk.
Yeah, I think that's what we should do next week, other than Dangerous Gate preview. Let's check in on the kids as they're on their study abroad trips.
Let's do it.
All right, guys, we'll be back with you next Tuesday talking about Dangerous Gate and to see how our Dragon Gate kids are doing abroad. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. I am at Fujiheya, cases at underscore in your case. Thanks for listening to Open the Voice Gate. We'll be back with you on Tuesday previewing Dangerous Gate and checking in on the excursions. Take care.